right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 685. Jason Lindgren is with me and Terry Lynn joins us. She's been on a number of times, mostly with Masterpiece. We are totally independent of that here today, or mostly independent of that. We're going to cover, we're going to extend. We just covered Scientology, and we're going to talk about cults in general here. And one of the things the internet has done very well has turned so many communities into cult-like behavior where they're almost incapable of considering other points of view, even to the point where certain things that the group has determined are feasible become branded with words that get repeated, and they become the be-all and end-all, and anyone who has a different point of view is usually shouted down. This goes on an awful lot. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a stormy good morning.
And welcome, Terry Lynn.
Thank you very much, Crow. This is going to be quite a different episode than what we've done before, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Do you have any websites or anything you'd like to lay down up front, or shall we jump in?
Yeah, I can actually. My particular website is Live True Health, spelled LIVETRU, no E in true, health.com. And there is a series that I did a few years ago. I finished it up that is actually found there that we'll talk about as we get there.
Okay. Is there anything you want to preface this with, Terry?
Well, I guess I would by just saying that I've been waiting to tell this story for about a decade. And why I couldn't will become more clear as I speak about my experience. And I just really appreciate this opportunity. And it is the first opportunity that I've had publicly to talk about this, even though I have done, like I mentioned, a series. It's actually called Deprogramming. Finished it up a few years ago. On that series, I was unable to say what group I came from. And it'll be clear why that is. But I do have a very unique set of circumstances that I'm, of course, anything I say is from that experience and conclusions that I've drawn up until now. And some of the stuff is very controversial, yet is something I've been waiting to share for all this time. So I'm really looking forward to this discussion.
So for me personally, I don't know how or why it happened, but when I realized that I was going to be fake internet famous and there was nothing I was doing about it, I had not yet embraced it. When I began to realize this is happening, I tried to make rules because I realized everything has changed now. When I changed my contact information, numbers and emails and things like that was one thing. But the one rule I made for myself, or the one that stuck the hardest, was don't join groups. Because the first thing that happened is I realized that all these groups wanted to co-opt my work and they wanted to co-opt me. And that one rule has served me better than maybe any other rules I made for myself, for the simple reason it has allowed me to maintain independent thought and not be expected to go along with group dynamics, group thought, or basically cult-like behavior. But anyhow, there's all that. Shall we jump in, Jason?
Yes, let's do that.
I totally agree with that, by the way. So I'm going to start with a little bit of my story, and then I'm going to go into some details that I think could help folks. I was raised in Christendom, and honestly, I don't even know if that is a common term, because I was in this group for so long that I do have gaps in my knowledge and understanding in certain areas. So I was raised in Christendom, Christian religion. So I have experience in what would be generally accepted as Christian churches. It was a Christian church, though we didn't call it that. Well, let me go back. So I was raised in a generally accepted Christian church, which was Lutheran, actually. And then later, at age 18, I was indoctrinated into a high-control Christian organization who claimed to worship Yahweh, translated in English to Jehovah, the true God. I am now around truther and new agey groups. I've had experience with the medical industrial complex, which I worked around for 10 years as a sign language interpreter, and various other organizations that have what you call followers. We mentioned the groups. The one thread in there is that in some way, shape, or form, all of those groups are looking for a savior. This is all connected. So I want to relay my experience with this particular religious group because it encompassed almost all of my adult life. And I've since been unindoctrinated. I did it myself with the help of a few things, which very, very few do. especially those that had been in it for as long as I did, which was about 30 years. It's hard to say because I started drifting toward the end, but very few make it out like I did after that amount of time. But doing that made it even more possible to see these same forces at work everywhere I go, among people that think they're doing all good, but are in fact highly indoctrinated for the very outcome of not looking inside themselves and guiding others to do the same. So that's that same idea of groupthink, of being in groups. You just naturally are going to want to fit in. You're naturally going to be encompassed by these ideas. So going back a little bit about how this happened, I was 17 years old and I met a young man who was raised as a Jehovah's Witness. So eventually I got pregnant by him. And yes, this was a big no-no. And he did get in trouble for being involved with me in this way. What's interesting is prior to things getting serious, he thought if he told me about his faith, I would be turned off, which would make it easier for him to let go since he really didn't want to do it. But actually, it did the opposite. I was like, no, tell me more. Because I've always had a thirst for data and turning that into wisdom. I was a book reader as a kid. And, you know, I read my mother's Dianetics book that she had in the cabinet. You know, I didn't remember what that was about, but it was just, the Bible was in there and everything. And I was just seeking out these things. What he was telling me was very intriguing in my 17-year-old mind. So he set me up to have an individual Bible study with a Jehovah's Witness, another JW, we call him, JW woman, from the local Kingdom Hall, as the churches are called. And she would usually bring another JW woman with her. I quickly made progress. I was just thirsting for all this knowledge. And I was baptized at age 20. So there are adult baptisms in this particular religion. I ended up staying almost, I would say, 30 years, with the last of those 30 years being pretty miserable. So the religion itself, I consider to be what I would call a destructive cult. A cult doesn't always mean it's a Jim Jones type of group. On the softer side, it can be anything that is not actively supporting you or thinking that, so you can think for yourself, anything that is subscribing power outside yourself. Yet there are prerequisites for actual cults. And these definitions, there's room for difference in these definitions. There's arguments over what can be considered a cult. But the list that I'm going to read off, the JWs have every single one of them. But not every cultish type group does. But there's always like a continuum on everything. There's like a spectrum on everything. So I can briefly list the prerequisites of that and some of the ways it applied to the group that I was in. Now, Crow, unless you had some questions.
Well, let me ask you a couple things. So you were raised Lutheran, as I was. It was actually, I was adopted. And the two things the parents got to answer that would carry forward is, will this child be able to find you? And what religion are they to be brought up? And so my parents said no, which the state of California enforced, so I couldn't find them. I quit looking at one point, but the other thing was I was going to be raised Lutheran. So you were raised Lutheran, but then there was a crossover, and this was through a boyfriend that you got pulled into what you're defining here as total cult behavior. It was by choice.
Well, it was definitely by choice, but you know, after I got pregnant, though, this was I started. Let's see, I started the Bible study just prior, actually. I think I could be wrong on that, but it was right around that same time. So there was a lot of pressure because I was now carrying his baby, and I was wanting. I just want truth. I just want to find truth, and so I was studying, you know, anything. So there was definitely pressure because I wanted to build a life with him, but there was no, I mean, you can't force anyone to study. You can't force, and it's not easy to get baptized either. It's not just, oh, hey, by the way, I'm ready. You have to answer a bunch of questions, like two or three sittings with an elder from the congregation, answer questions to be able to even be approved for baptism.
So what does that mean when you're baptized, that you're now a full-fledged member? Is that the idea?
Yes. That means that you are a full-fledged member. You are no longer what is called an unbaptized publisher. A publisher is one that goes door to door. You need to do that before you get baptized. You need to be indoctrinated into the whole program. You are known as not being baptized yet, and you're fawned over and just love bombed and helped by every way possible. to get to that point. And then the baptism is your decision. You're repenting and turning around, your decision to move forward. And you accept at least what is told you. You accept all of the limitations and prerequisites and policies and all that.
So is that vows? Are you taking vows?
I wouldn't say they're called vows, but once you get through the questions, you are known to be, once you're approved, you're known to have understood what the basic teachings are. You know what the requirements are, not prerequisites, that was the wrong word, requirements are, and that you, I guess vow might be, we didn't really use that word, but vow to serve Jehovah the rest of your life, no matter what. He is number one. The service to Jehovah is number one before anything else.
Would you describe the baptism process as being a contract? Are you making a contract?
Yeah, I would say that. That's a great way to put it. Yeah, you are baptized in full water immersion in front of whoever wants to watch at usually a convention. So it's a public display like a marriage would be.
Were there any red flags at this point?
No, because you know what? I came from such a dysfunctional family that it was a breath of fresh air to have the support, and to have a direction and to have some, just honestly, just some basic discipline. I loved the Bible. I still have some respect for it. And so, no, I was ecstatic.
Most people are familiar with the Jehovah's Witnesses coming door to door. I mean, I don't think there's a person in the United States that probably hasn't experienced that. It's ubiquitous. If someone experiences that and they take an interest, are they treated about how you are? How does someone who responds to the evangelism at their door, how are they accepted in? Is it critical or is it no matter who you are, come on?
I'm not totally understanding the question. So when we go door to door, if somebody accepts what we are teaching.
Yeah, they say, I want to be a Jehovah's Witness. What do I do next?
Nobody does that, but that's why it's hard for me. But so what they do next is if they're interested, what we try to slyly do is you try to get them to do a Bible study, whether it's just at the doorstep with a couple scriptures or they invite you in. I was taught for 25 years, I was on the Theocratic Ministry School. So I was taught how to reason, how to find common ground. I'm a pretty good speaker because of this. You're taught how to do all of these things, how to get past any kind of objections. So, but we're not taught in a way that, you know, here's how you lie. Not at all. No, we believed 100% that we had the truth and here's how you persuade. So it was looked upon very good if you had a Bible study or more. And I was a Bible study conductor's dream because I wanted to study twice a week. And they were like, well, I want to get this going. And they, of course, thought it was only because of the man I was interested in. And it wasn't all that. But so I was a dream student, but that's not usually the case. So we were just happy to have conversations, but you want to have what we call a Bible study. And then they study themselves to baptism.
Let me rephrase. Is there anyone who takes an interest ever turned away for any reason?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. So I guess before we jump in, how do you define a cult? What is a cult?
Well, I think it's a spectrum. And so like what I mentioned earlier, I think that on the more destructive cult side, that they are going to control your life, your thoughts. There are certain processes that are done on purpose. On the softer side, I just think it's a group that's not actively supporting you thinking for yourself and subscribing power outside of yourself, which is most religions, or if not all religion. So mine was a destructive cult. And I oftentimes say that it's a high control religion because it's a nicer way to say it, a softer way to say it. Because then that's true as well. It's a very high control religion. Even though we weren't in our own compound, we had to walk around as if we were. Everything was scary out there. We were taught that that's the world, that person is worldly, and that it was only going to do you harm.
Do they ever cross the line that you saw to the point where something could be considered illegal?
Yes. And this is what took me out of it. This was more hour two. But I will just briefly say what took me out of it was their illegal activity with how they handled child molestation.
So on a whole, I was raised Lutheran. I wasn't even aware. I never really thought whether the people who came to my door were Lutheran. I guess that goes without saying because they're certainly not Catholic. but is their view of scripture markedly different from other forms of Christianity? Or would you say that they derive similar meaning from any given scripture?
I think it's different. I think amongst the Christian religions, Jehovah's Witnesses are the most different. One is they don't believe in the Trinity. They're non-Trinitarian. That's a big one. That's probably the only Christian religion that doesn't believe that Jesus is God. In fact, to the point that many people, when we went door to door, said, oh yeah, I know you. You guys don't believe in Jesus. And that's not true. It's just that we're non-Trinitarian. Holidays, if you really look at where these things started, that's where I did when I was studying with them. I looked at these things. They still don't do holidays. And that's very rare for a Christian religion to not celebrate Christmas, let's say.
They don't do any holidays because I went to school my entire life with a girl who was Jehovah's Witness, and she wouldn't even stand up or do the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
No, none of that. None of that's done. None of those. And that was the good part of my training, is I started to look at everything. And a lot of what they do teach is true. Now, what you do with that is up to you. But looking into how some of these things started and the correlations and how there is a dark side of the world, and a lot of that stuff is actually true. And any religion, I think, or what I've seen, is you got to have some truth or else nobody's going to be attracted. You got to have some good, some truth. It's just you don't know what part of it's not until you do.
It's funny how some of these groups who would get defined as a cult, or we view them as unhelpful, have some really helpful parts. Like when we covered the Scientologists, no TV. That's so helpful, you know, if you think about it, one of their rules. But when you glom it all together, not such a great organization. You know, when I think of a cult, I guess I think of there's an idea, there's a set of beliefs, and that's all surrounded by control. That's how I kind of view a cult. Is that a fair view?
Yes, control.
So let's get into it. Let's get into how they regulate your daily life.
Cool. So this is going to relate to other groups as well. And I'm just speaking from my own experience from this particular group. Verse one, and this comprises the model that's considered the BITE model, B-I-T-E. So the B is behavioral control. Groups regulate your daily life. They regulate where, how, and with whom a member lives, eats, sleeps, and dresses. In my case, I mentioned some of these. You could not have friends commiserate with people outside of the group. If you did, it was to be only at work. Like, you know, you get things done, you know, but you don't go out afterwards. You don't have any friends. God forbid a boyfriend. You know, that was all no-nos. So the where and how, well, they kept you so busy that you didn't really have time anyway. The eat, sleeps, no, but the dresses, yes. I mean, you couldn't go to the Kingdom Hall or engage in any kind of theocratic activity for a woman without having a dress or a skirt on. Men had to wear ties. They couldn't have beards. Now that's since changed, the beard thing. So how I looked, how I dressed, how I groomed was all regulated. Time management is another one. They keep you very busy. We didn't necessarily have rituals except for the fact that at the time, back in the 80s and 90s, we had three meetings a week. Sunday's 2 hours, Thursday was 2 hours, and Tuesday was an hour, where you would have to go out of the house for a meeting. That was a lot, especially for people that are working.
What were the meetings about?
They're Bible studies. So the Sunday meeting had a public talk, or anyone, you know, we were inviting people to the public talk. That was a 45-minute talk. You sing a song before and after, and then you have a Watchtower study. Everybody knows I've heard of the Watchtower. They have study articles in there. I don't know if they do anymore. I think they do. And you would go through, there would be somebody who's going through that material, and it would be question and answer. But the thing is that during those discussions, you'd raise your hand and then Mike would come to you and you'd answer the question. It wasn't the time to ask a question. It wasn't the time to disagree. You are just, it is a ritual in that, oh, here, where's the answer in the paragraph? That's all it was. And if somebody was new and they came and they had a question, it would be a very odd, rare thing. And everyone would know, oh, this person's off the street, this person's new, whatever, and we'll meet them after and all that. But for anyone that was especially a baptized witness, like, you don't veer off what the Watchtower said. What you're doing is you're answering to try to support whatever the Watchtower is saying.
So wait a minute, the Watchtower, because I've been handed the Watchtower. I thought that was just like a leaflet or a pamphlet. What is the Watchtower?
The Watchtower is, I don't know anymore, because again, I've been gone for almost a decade, but it used to be published twice a month. and they would have an article, a cover article of various topics. And then they would always have a couple study articles in there, and there would be questions in there. And that's what we would use for study. And then there, you know, I don't remember, at the end, there'd be some other things, some other like small articles.
So that little thing that they hand out when they come to your door that says, watch, that's like the marching orders for that period of time. That's obviously must be created at HQ, right?
Yes, it's created at HQ.
Where is HQ?
It used to be in Brooklyn. Now it's moved. They've moved to, the name escapes me, but they're still in the state of New York. Patterson. They're at Patterson, New York now.
So you mentioned the BITE, and just so people know, that's an acronym for behavior, info, thought, and emotion. You can look it up. There's actually treatment for this idea. If I remember correctly, a guy named Hassan, is it Stephen?
Stephen Hassan.
Yep. Yeah, Stephen Hassan came up with it, just so people know what that means.
Yeah. So financial dependence, permission structure, and rewards and punishments is included in the behavior control. Financial dependence for us was obviously the giving of, you know, we didn't have tithing or anything, but we were constantly reminded we need to give. And also we were poor because we were really encouraged. I was a full-time minister for 2 years. We were really encouraged to support the ministry for husbands to be able to support their family so their wife could do it or the kids could do it.
Is it tithing? Is it called tithing?
No, it's not called tithing. It's just whatever you can. Whatever you can. And I don't know what people were giving, you know, but, and nobody knows. It was not something that was passed around. We didn't do that. It was a thing in the back, a box in the back.
Was it everything you can, like as much as you can, you need to
give? As much as you can.
Yeah.
As much as you can. Work to support your ministry. So we had men that were washing windows because they didn't go to college. I snuck off to college in my mid-20s. Thankfully, I did that. Because the end's coming any day. You don't need to, you know, go to college. You don't need to get this higher learning because college is only going to corrupt you. All those college fraternities and all that, you're going to be hobnobbing with worldly people. And it's just, it's a catch 22. So financial dependence, I mean, in a way, absolutely. The brothers that serve at HQ, they basically take a vow of poverty. They're given a very small stipend and basically their families have to support them because it's not enough. So the money's at the top, I found out later, the money's at the top. But permission structure requiring approval for major life decisions was kind of a thing. Rewards and punishments, they do use behavioral control. They discourage individualism. So they have disfellowshipping. They have marking. They have privileges that are given or taken away. I was marked once. I was disfellowshipped twice towards the end. So I know what that all that feels like. Privileges, like I had the privilege of being a full-time minister early on. And I was a part-time minister for, I don't know, probably 2 years off and on.
What does it mean to be disfellowshipped?
So that's a big one. So you're shunned. You are not considered a Jehovah's Witness anymore. You are shunned by anyone that is a baptized witness. You can come to the Kingdom Hall, but nobody will talk to you. You can sit in the back. I mean, if I sat in the front, I'd be okay, but I sat in the back because it's shameful. It's, you feel shamed. You do that because you're trying to get back. You're still trying to get the quote spiritual food, trying to show that you're trying.
Will they take you back after that?
Yes, I was taken back twice, both times when I was disfellowshipped.
How does the gender work? Can women hold power in this organization? I'm kind of assuming that it's biblical where the men are in charge and that goes down through the family structure.
Absolutely. So women, in order to be able to be a minister, need to be in the theocratic ministry school. Men and women both join that. So the extent of what women can do within the congregation is to give talks. But what we would do is we would have to do it with another sister. And so we could not be at the podium teaching the congregation, but what we could do is we would be given a topic and we'd have to develop that topic within a 5-minute time frame. And I would go and I'd sit at the table with another sister acting like it was a Bible study, or I might stand on the stage with a microphone between us and act like I'm at the door and do a presentation. I was very good at this, by the way. When I was a door-to-door minister, I was very, very good at it. Because I'm very cognitive heavy, I can learn, and I was very much into teaching what I believed, and I wanted to be good at, and I still want to be good at whatever I decide to do. And so I really enjoyed it. I didn't like being on stage because I had anxiety issues, but that got better over time. So women, that's the extent they could do. They could comment from their seat if they raised their hand and got called on. And they could be, oh, they loved women going out in the ministry. They were the leaders really in that because the men are at home working, supporting the family.
So is there an idea within the organization of men's business and women's business kind of thing?
Yes. Brothers were considered, they could hold the information, decide whether to disseminate that to their wife, especially if it had to do with congregational matters. I mean, if they were an elder, which I was married to one that rose in ranks to be an elder, that was confidential information. And there was no place, obviously, to share that with your wife and anything that had to do with congregation things. So, but the elders, the ones themselves with congregational matters amongst maybe regional and district areas, only amongst themselves, there was, you know, like I mentioned, child molestation issues that I didn't know were there, that nobody would mention, but I found out later.
We'll have to talk about that in the second hour.
Yes, that would be great. So there are secrets. So this is hand in hand with the I in the BITE model with information control. They restrict access to outside perspectives and manipulate internal communication. And that's exactly what we saw. The elders had their information that they couldn't share. And if your husband was an elder, he couldn't share that information. But there was deception is one of those key points, deliberately withholding or distorting or lying about information that is, I found out to be true. Isolation from media or any outside sources. So discouraging or forbidding access to non-cult sources. We could not read outside material to a great degree. That's why we were not encouraged to go to college. Well, heaven forbid you should learn something that actually made sense. So it was only information coming from this organization, especially if you were raised in it.
So no novels, no fiction reading, nothing like that?
It was greatly discouraged. It's not like you could be, it would be taken away from you, but you could be brought to the elders for certain things. And I never heard of anyone being brought to the elders for reading fiction or anything like that. But going to college was something that maybe you'd be talked to about. But again, most of these situations are private. So if anyone was talked to, I wouldn't necessarily know. I know my own experience.
Does that extend through entertainment?
How are TV and movies,
how are they treated?
That's a big one. So we were not allowed to watch rated R movies because I was a full-time minister, which was called a pioneer, full-time pioneer, and my husband was serving. We would lose those privileges if we watched a rated R movie. So instead of going off, just teaching someone to learn by experience and what their heart wants and what's right and wrong for them, it's all the rules that are in place. You can't do these things. And for young people, that just makes them want to do it more, of course. But it didn't teach me anything. All it did was provide a bunch of gaps. But no, you could not be seen going to certain, like football, anything that was violent. But yet on the flip side, because we couldn't do hardly anything, what I noticed a pattern of within my brothers and sisters at the time was they were greatly involved with movies, just the okay kind, you know, that's what they spent their time. What else can they do? So very much into movies, very much also into alcohol. I will tell you that people didn't really talk about. Drunkenness was not allowed. Well, what's the line of drunkenness? And so we have a lot of very unhappy folks that are Jehovah's Witnesses right now.
There's no communion of any kind, is there?
No.
No wine, no wafer?
No. There's a yearly memorial celebration to celebrate Christ's death, which according to the calendar, the Jewish calendar, that's the day that it happens. Okay, so I said no, and that's because from my own perspective, it's no. But actually, during that yearly celebration, which is a copy of the Last Supper, there is wine and bread that someone in the congregation makes passed, but those of the earthly class, which is what I was, do not partake of that, only of the 144,000 class. And that's a whole nother conversation. So we did do that, but we just passed it. I just passed it along.
All right. So we kind of started to go down information control and you touched on deception and we're talking in a roundabout way about isolation. We've hit on the media and other things. What would you add to the isolation component?
Add to the isolation? Well, I mean, your only friends were in the congregation, so they weren't really friends. You were told who your friends were. It could be lonely at times. It was fake a lot of times. You were fortunate to have found a real friend, which I found a few. But just isolation from what we called the world, anything that was worldly, was either forbidden or you have to be very careful with it. Spying was another thing that was, I could put in this category, because if you knew of somebody, like, okay, I'll give you a for instance that happened to me towards the end, the last 10 years, I was really looking into some other avenues of healing, health and healing and all that. And I was doing meditation and I mentioned it to one of my friends and she felt the need to nervously approach me after a meeting and tell me about meditation and how it can open up portals. And she thought I was doing transcendental meditation. I told her I wasn't. It was different. I'm actually doing something totally different. And she kind of shoved a paper at me. I just have to read this. And she was very worried. And so that got to the circuit overseer's wife, who, there's districts and there's circuits. And then she talked to me. So it's out of what they feel is care and concern. Most of the time, it really is. These aren't bad people. But you do need to report if you know of anything. And so people tend to hide things.
So it's very much a control system.
Very much a control system. My son now says to me, I'll say it this way. My son now says to me, because he was raised in it, he feels a lot of guilt over things he shouldn't feel guilty of. And that is trauma for him.
Oh, because he's doing things in the walk of life that the so-called church had told him he shouldn't do.
Yeah, mostly as a young one, I think is what he was talking about, that he felt that he was just always under the microscope of what the thought. Okay, I call them thought crimes. You can't even think a certain way or you should feel bad.
You know, it's crazy how when you start to break these control systems of cults down, it's like by measured in degrees when something quits being helpful. Like when we interviewed the lady who was part of the Aboriginals from Australia, she talked about part of their culture was there was women's business and men's business, but it was so helpful, so defining and not enforced in any way. If they did have any gender dysphoria, people are just allowed, you know, if a man wanted to hang out with the women, he just did that. There was no big deal, but, you know, the exact same thing's going on here, but in different degrees where it becomes controlling and it becomes problematic. So many of these things, it's just by degrees.
Yeah, the need to know basis of information.
What was the level of happiness with people there?
Very low, very low. It's people just trying to get through. They're trying to get through to Armageddon. They're trying to get through this, quote, old system to the new system. They're not having children because they're waiting for the new system. They're not going to college because they're going to do a full-time ministry. And everyone just seemed on some level to be miserable because everyone's being just, they're not free.
Is the end near? Is that part of it?
Yeah.
The end is near?
Yeah, the end is near. Armageddon's coming any day. You got to be ready. If not ready, then you got to go out and you got to save people. You got to go door to door because it can happen any day. It's this, you know, got to do it now type of thing. And if you're not in this mode of thinking that we're in the last days, which I heard 35 years ago, 40 years ago, here we are still, you know, that there's something wrong with the way you're thinking.
So does that idea, that end is near idea, draw pretty closely to the book of Revelation? Is that where it begins?
Yeah.
So it's the same kind of thought about the end times that most Christians hold?
Yes, it's the same thought. However, that thread is pulled through the whole Bible from Genesis to Revelation. It's not just Revelation.
It sounds like they're more dramatic about it.
Yeah, well, they're very serious about it. They're very literal. They take Revelation very literally. In a lot of ways, they do allow the Bible to interpret itself to some degree, but there's a lot of other stuff going on that's their own interpretation that I didn't realize until way later.
And do they have their own Bible?
People say that. People say we have our own Bible, but I say we, that they have their own Bible. So it's the New World Translation, and it is one that preserves the name Yahweh into the translation Jehovah all 7,000 times. And it was translated by JWs. And supposedly, it is one of the most accurate ones. I actually believe that. And it's not a paraphrase Bible. It's what we'd more call, it's closer to a transliteration. So when you look at, I think it's called the Kingdom Interlinear. It's been a long time, but there's a publication that has the word in Hebrew or Greek, or Aramaic in this case in the Bible, And what is the literal translation into English or whatever language? And it has that right below it. And the New World Translation does pretty good with that.
But it's the same 66 books that most Bibles have.
Yeah. Yeah. And nobody else uses it. It's only the JWs. But the biggest thing is that Jehovah's name is in there.
So it's called the NWT, the New World Translation. And I think a lot of people looking out, or what they think of Jehovah's Witnesses, is the idea that they're espousing only 144,000 go to heaven. But I think it's different than that, isn't it?
No, that is what they teach. The 144,000 are the ones that will go and stay in heaven. And mankind was made for the earth, and that the rest have a earthly hope.
So what happens to everybody? So 144,000 go to heaven?
Eventually, that's the ruling class, the 144,000. Now, I say that because this is where it gets a little mixed up, but supposedly there's a few of those people left on the earth now, and that supposedly that number is mostly filled in the heavenly class, and we're like waiting for the end. And those left, let's say 2,000 on the earth left that have a heavenly hope, we called it, then they would just be immediately brought to heaven. And the Armageddon scene would destroy those who are worthy of destruction, and those that aren't would remain. And that's the big question of, used to be taught that that's only JWs. Now they're backtracking on that, but that is exactly what we were taught.
Well, I guess membership is not playing the numbers, because according to a lookup right now, as of 2025, there were 9 million active Jehovah's Witnesses. So that is a very small fraction that are getting the brass ring.
Absolutely. And I think it was 3 when I joined. But a lot of those numbers, if it does increase, I would say 99, 95, 99% of that are those kids that are raised in it. People aren't. There's too much information out there now. You know, we didn't have the internet in the 80s when I came in. So they're pretty much, the gig is up for them. The ones that are in. It's hard to leave, and they're raising their kids in it. And that's where the numbers are coming from.
In the world now, Jason and I have gone to lengths to show the population's been falling in the first world, as it's been called, since at least the 70s. Some people have put it before that. What we're seeing now is that it seems young people are not even dating anywhere near the same way we did when we were young. Point is, birth rate's gone down. Within the Jehovah's Witnesses, do the families tend to have a lot of children?
No, they don't. They tend to not have children because they're supposed to serve Jehovah best they can. And that usually means the full-time ministry for someone in the family, usually the wife. And you can have children later because you're going to live forever.
Was anything made about the fact that Michael Jackson and his family were Jehovah's Witnesses?
We knew of it. I think Prince even was a baptized witness at the end of his life. We knew about Michael Jackson, but I mean, it was never a topic of a big conversation. Definitely not from higher ups.
I was just wondering if they kind of pointed to them, kind of like how Scientology does that. Like, we got Tom Cruise.
No, not at all. Not at all.
According to a search now, believe it or not, Jehovah's Witnesses are experiencing growth, reporting the largest growth rate among U.S. faith groups at 2.25. And then it follows on by claiming, however, they face extreme challenges, including a very high turnover rate, which you just said, with many members leaving the organization.
Yeah. Members that leave usually are not in it. There's a lot, there's heavy cognitive dissonance by the time you get to the 15, 20, 25 and over mark. Those people, it's very rare for them to leave. Someone to leave, like myself, is very rare. What I had going for me is I had a average life for the first 18 years. So I had that experience.
How hard is it to leave? Do you actually get pressure from the organization if they know you're trying to leave?
Yes. So that's going to be in the second hour about how I left and what I had to do and where I stand right now. But it's not easy. No, they're going to try to help, quote, help you. And unless you're disfellowshipped when you leave, then they're not going to try at all. Well, apparently elders might come and visit you once a year. I never really got that, but I was always around. That's why.
Well, we'll push that into hour two. So with the remaining little bit of hour one we've got, let's go over thought control.
Yeah.
And then we'll be able to touch on the so-called spicy topics when we come back from break. Well, you can't really, you know, things like problems with children, you really can't publicly address that anymore to any great degree. So let's jump into thought control.
So the group attempts to dominate how members process information and view reality. There's black and white thinking, us versus them. That was huge in Jehovah's Witnesses, as I've already mentioned. The group is all good. The world is all evil. They use thought terminating phrases that shut down critical analysis. All throughout all of the studies that we did, it's basically saying that I was looping to the governing body is the ones that have the direct line to Jehovah, you know, and there's this top-down approach. And so if they're saying it, then it's got to be true. And so all this, like, no, you can't, your thinking is off because Jehovah talks to the governing body and they're telling us this. So rejection of critical thinking is another one. Forbidding questions about the leader. And we don't really, it wasn't really like we had a leader, but there was the governing body. Those were the leaders. Any kind of doctrine. I mean, to say any kind of question about a doctrine once you've been baptized is a red flag to them. So anything outside of what they believed, basically. Identity alteration, to an extent, encouraging people to adopt a new identity. I mean, you were a Jehovah's Witness now. That was your identity. And you identify solely with that group. You don't identify with your group at work. You don't identify with a sports group that you play a team on. The brothers could, you know, get together on a Saturday and play football, but it's all brothers. You don't join a team from school. You know, any parents that had their kids having any kind of extracurricular activities was considered spiritually weak. It was one of those things that you just didn't really say if you did it. My son was in a couple things, but by then I pretty much had it. But so they speak what's called the true language, Jehovah's Witnesses. We had their own language. And if I kind of thought somebody was a JW out in, you know, the world, the public, I might drop something, I say something, and then that would tell me if they are or not because they know this word. So there was definitely we had our own language. So I can get into emotional control. That's the last one, unless you have a question.
So if I remember correctly, part of that control is in dress. If I remember correctly, anyone that ever came to my door seemed to have on a typical look and feel, black and white. And I might not be remembering this, but is there a uniform, so to speak?
No, definitely not.
That's more the Mormons.
That is the Mormons. We had to be conservative. Definitely. That was a big thing. Like men and women both had to be conservative. Like there was a video that came out that XJWs laugh about tight pants on men. You know, there's this new trend that came in a few years ago about men wearing tight dress pants. And that was like something that they said, you know, don't do. And only the gay population does that. And, you know, it's just ridiculous kind of reasoning. But so men got it too, you know, but women for sure, tops that couldn't be too low cut and couldn't be tight and all that. But no, what you would see with JWs at your door would be a man in a suit and a woman with a dress or skirt on that looked very conservative.
All right. With the few minutes we have left, let's go through emotional control to top off hour one.
So the group manipulates feelings to foster dependency and fear. There's guilt and shame. So any problems that you have is your fault. That's your sinful nature. Fear indoctrination, instilling irrational phobias about leaving the group. That was big. Fear of hell, disaster, and inability to survive alone, which they do the best they can to make sure that you feel that. Afterwards, emotional narrowing, discouraging negative emotions towards the group while promoting excessive emotional highs during rituals. So you just had to like put on this happy face and this mask and oh, everything's just great. And we're just happy, happy, happy. And you can never say anything negative and it's all fake. Shunning, which I received treatment of twice, threatening or rejecting members who leave, creating a fear of losing friends and family, which you do lose that. And that there's going to be no happiness outside, teaching that fulfillment is impossible outside the group. They taught that you're going to be a drug addict. You're going to just, these people are going to just influence you in bad ways. Everyone's going to be sleeping with everybody else. And it's just, you're not going to have any kind of control. And it's just, you would never want that for yourself. And so, wow, that's like scary to think that that scary world is out there. And that is the picture that they paint to a T.
Is there drug abuse within the church to any great degree?
No, not to a great degree. Alcohol, because alcohol can be drank, can be had, and it's not illegal against policies. It's just the amount is once somebody has become a known drunkard, they could be disfellowshipped. That's rare to happen, but it could happen. But drugs, even just something like weed, you know, THC, no, like you can't, you'd have to hide it. And if you did have an issue and it came before the elders, nobody would really know unless it was announced. And that kind of thing would only be announced if it was already out within the congregation that it was happening. Maybe we should get into that in hour two.
Yeah, we're getting ready to wrap up hour one. In hour two, we're going to be covering the issues that have to do with children, but I'm really kind of waiting to hear how you made your escape here. Jason, you want to add anything in before I wrap up hour one?
Well, the whole thing sounds, for the most part, pretty dreadful that the people are being held through fear mostly, right?
Yes. Fear and just indoctrination as to what's true and what's right.
You know, I've had them come to my door numbers of times, and I guess I never really thought about this portion of it. And now that you guys corrected me with the Mormon thing, when I lived in Lemon Grove in San Diego, we were getting evangelized by both groups, now that I think back, because it was the Mormons that were in black and white, and they would come regularly, like a couple times a year, I think. But Jason, anything else to add to hour one?
No, let's get into hour two. I think we're going to hear some interesting stuff.
Yeah, that's where the spice hits the pepper. So Terry, can you lay down your contact or website information again, please?
Yeah, so my practice name is Terry Lynn. That was my original given name. And my website is livetruehealth.com. There's no E in true. And I kind of say there's no E in true because it always ends in U. So livetruehealth.com. There's going to be I do need to mention this. If you go on the videos page, I think it is, look at the series called Deprogramming. And I did 12 different videos, interviews with experts. I had Kathy O'Brien, who many people know. She's an MKUltra victim. I had some really cool guests, and I let them talk about their own expertise in their field, and I was learning at the same time. So I did that over a year, and every one of those videos is on my website under the videos section.
And by the way, we should probably take a moment to mention Masterpiece since you're here with us.
Yeah, so that is my recent gig. Last 3 years, I've been with Masterpiece. It's been a full 3 years now. And I've been on your show a number of times because of that. I think this is my 7th appearance, I think. Totally different from the others. And so normally I don't get to promote my own website when I'm on platform for Masterpiece. So yes, I am the Chief Communications and Wellness Officer over there. That's how they delineate my title over there. I am one of the execs, was one of the first 4 or 5 when we first opened. And yep, I know a lot about Masterpiece and what's going on there.
And that is a product that we all here use and have had very good results with.
That's actually what I was going to say. Of all the things that we've covered, that one has a pretty glowing reputation to include people who've come back. We heard the story of the nonverbal autism that became verbal. And just in general, the idea of typical daily use, which I do, my wife does, Jason and Rose both do, it's been very, very popular. By the way, there is a link on the sponsors page to Masterpiece, and I think you do get a small discount, although Rose might yell at me if I got that wrong. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode, and they get access to everything. Forums, comments, the film Shoot the Moon, and exclusive work on the sun when the weather cooperates in the tiny state of Rhode Island. With that, we're going to take a short break and we'll be back for hour two. This one's going to be pretty spicy if I had to judge. But here we go. We're going to take 5 and I'll see you logged in as a member when we return. I'd like to wish everybody a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers. We'll be right back.
is the enemy of knowing.